2 Radio. I'm your host, Jackie Campbell, and it's my absolute pleasure to interview each of our members so you can get to know them just that little bit better.
Now, in small business, some of the trickiest things that you can do is trying to communicate effectively with your client. You've got to not just interrupt their day, but you've got to speak in such a way as they get what you're trying to say, they stop what they're doing, they listen, and then they take action. Now, we all know about our products, but our clients aren't interested in what it does, whether it's got 2 whizzy bangs, 3 whizzy bangs, and whether the plug-in goes here or the plug-out goes there. They want to know what problem it solves. And talking about that sometimes is just really difficult. Ever so luckily, we have met the most fabulous lady. Her name is Wendy Corner. She has a business called ComCoach. Using all her speech pathology skills, she's actually helping us talk with our clients about things rather than talking at them and missing the point. Wendy, welcome.
Thank you.
I am very excited about this conversation.
So am I.
I love to chat, and I can talk for hours and hours. Mindless babble sometimes. I feel this need to fill in the gaps. I'm not very good with silence. I feel like I've got to continually explain until someone gets it. Now, that's not necessarily effective when I'm talking to my client, is it?
No. Actually, what's more effective is asking them a question and getting them to think about the answer. Because if they then think about the answer, they're more likely to own their own solution. So if somebody asks me a question, I will reframe it for them and say, do you know what a better quality of question would be?
Correcting from the beginning, nice.
Yeah, and that way they go, oh, I never thought of it like that. Questions tend to be the way we do our Q&A in our heads. That's what our internal dialogue is made up of. Mm-hmm. I ask myself a question, I answer myself. Now, if you ask yourself a pretty dumb question, you're going to answer with a pretty dumb answer. I'll give you an example. Why does this always happen to me?
Because, you know, my parents didn't love me, or because I'm no good, or because and you do, you start that dialogue.
Yeah, and you're going to have negative, negative, negative response.
You immediately put yourself in that victim's place.
Exactly, exactly. Rather than saying, okay, how can I get out of this? Or what can I get out of this? What lesson have I got to learn from this situation?
Could you ask it in a different way, which is instead of, why does this always happen to me? Just simply ask, why did that happen?
Even why will give you a bit of a dodgy response. So it's happened.
Can't change it.
Can't change it. But how do I get out of this? How do I move forward? What can I learn from whatever crap got me in this position in the first place? Because if you carry on doing the same thing that got you there, guess what? You're going to carry on with the same result. So you've got to change things up. So that's one of the things that I focus on with people is to say, okay, how could you ask that in a better way that instead of being problem-solving, you're solution-seeking?
I take it you do this with your clients, not just in everyday conversations. So someone says, how would you like your coffee? Can I give you some feedback there? There's a better way to ask that question.
Just in a business situation, absolutely.
And when we're paying you to do it, got it.
Absolutely. And if you're paying me to do it, then definitely I answer the question straight off.
Good to know. Okay, so obviously communicating is not just with our clients. It's with our team members. It's with our suppliers even. Mm. If we're not communicating effectively with our suppliers, how on earth are they going to give us what we're actually after?
Exactly.
So how do you even start?
One of the things you need to be aware of is, as your company, your values. Have you actually got those written down where your staff can see them? Are they on the walls? You know, the arty-farty single words in a frame. It looks a bit arty-farty, but actually, those are there. And subliminally, by the way, for those of you who are listening, I'm pointing to the walls here.
like a mad thing, she looks a little like a starfish.
Absolutely.
It's important to create these visual pictures.
Yes, yeah. Indeed. They are looking at... Subliminally, they're getting those messages. And if you have an office where your customers, your clients come in, they can also see around the room what your values are.
So it effectively reinforces the core brand, what you stand for.
Exactly. Now, once you've got your values established and you know what is happening from your point of view, how you're languaging that then to your staff, you make sure that they all understand and have a role within those values. Because if all of your staff know, I'm important here, I matter, I am a very important cog in this wheel, that then also transfers to your suppliers, because you can then language exactly what it is you need from your suppliers, and you know whether your suppliers are going to be a values match for you or not. Can you trust them to deliver on what you've asked? Have you languaged it clearly enough so they know what you want them to deliver?
You don't just want trousers, you want black trousers.
Indeed. And in size X, Y, and Z.
Good point. Yes, okay. Hence the value of a conversation.
Indeed.
Right.
Indeed.
Okay. So is this something that you have always done?
Oh, yes.
Since you were very little, you were a language buff.
Yes, I made up my own language when I was a child.
Of course you did. But did you teach this language to someone? Ah,
yes.
Fantastic.
So my best mate and I had this little secret language that we had where I was about 7 or 8 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I can still remember a couple of them, but I won't share them with the world.
Because, of course, that would be wrong. Because, yes, then you'd have to train us and then that wouldn't be a secret.
Exactly.
Anymore. Okay. And are you still friends with this lady?
Oh, yes.
Do you still use your secret language occasionally?
No, I think she probably has forgotten all about it.
I bet you she hasn't. I bet if you actually said, do you remember?
Yeah.
She might not be able to remember the language, but I'm sure she'd remember.
She would remember that bit, yeah.
Absolutely.
The fact that we did that, yeah. So, yes, I mean, I used to do that. I've always been somebody who can listen very carefully to accents as well. So I used to mess around with different accents in the UK. So that was always fun. I've got a good ear for accents, which is probably just as well, because having moved to the northeast of Scotland, where the vowel shifts were completely different. So when somebody said to me, they're making an affa mess of the fleers, I'm sorry. So she repeated it. They're making an affa mess of the fleers. They're making an awful mess of the floors.
Oh, the floors. I've got the flares. I've got the beginning part of it, but the floors. Okay.
So you have to really listen to the vowel shift.
Working in speech pathology, which is, of course, your background, that ear for differentiation, that ear for how something sounds versus perhaps how it should sound. Not should sound is the wrong word, but you know what I mean? It's
what your target sound is.
What your target sound, there you go. So you're trying to help someone whose speech is perhaps not as easy to understand, though they think they're saying the same thing, to move that, to do that vowel shift and that shift across, so it sort of kind of at least mostly matches the way someone's going to listen to it.
Yes.
It'd be super important.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because it's not just a case of using the right words, is it? It's a case of the right tone, the right sound.
Mm-hmm.
Because so much of our spoken language, especially if you take away that visual context, is purely not necessarily on the words. I mean, look at the way you speak to a dog or you speak to a baby.
Mm-hmm.
The dog can't understand English, though we would swear they could.
Yes, they can.
They understand the tone and the inflection. So how important is that when you're actually speaking with your clients?
Very important, very important. Because if you go into motherese, as it's known,
you just go,
that's fine if you're talking to little child or to pet. You start talking in motherese to your client and they're going to think you're patronising them and they are not going to be happy.
Unless it happens to be contextually appropriate. Not that I can think of a situation where that would be right, but
I'm struggling.
I'm sure that someone will be able to correct us on that and say, well, hang on a minute, but blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe if your client happens to be a 2-year-old and you're running a childcare centre.
That's fair enough. That's absolutely fair enough.
Good. We found an example. Moving on.
Yes. But, I mean, you're looking at also the speed of delivery, because some people speak incredibly quickly. And the people who are listening have kind of lost it.
Mm-hmm.
And if they've zoned out even for a second or two, you've started here, and if you're speaking very quickly, by the time they've picked it up, for those of you listening, there's a distance of about 10 centimetres between my fingers. They've come back in 10 centimetres after you started, if you can visualise this in terms of a graph, and they've lost all of that information in between.
And if it's 3 or 4 words, fine. Yeah. But if it's 15 or 16 words, then you've lost entire context in some cases.
Right. So you've also got to make sure that to start with, you get somebody's attention straight off. We habitually, as human beings, have a me-centered brain. right from the start, you were saying, what's in it for me?
Mm.
And that's exactly where our clients want to hear. They don't care who you are. They don't care what you do. They just want to know, are you going to make things better? So when you have identified what your client is looking at Google in the middle of the night, going for Google words, what are the things that keep them up all night? You make sure that you use those words when you're talking to them. Because suddenly they think, oh, they know me.
They're talking to me.
Yes.
They get it. They understand.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. This is a solution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because let's face it, it's the old analogy, isn't it? When you go into Bunnings to buy a drill, you don't want a drill. You want a hole.
Yes. Yes.
But you can't buy holes, so you have to buy something which will give you what you want, which in this case is the hole.
Yes.
So if you can't understand that, oh, I could tell you about my drill, it's a great 86 horsepower with a blah, 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 and a hoosie, you're going, what? Is that going to make the size hole I want? And people just look at you like you're a bit bonkers.
Yeah. Hmm. So it's actually, what is the client after? And if you can language what you're selling around that, particularly straight off, then you've got interest. Then they're not going to zone out.
Mm.
The other thing to be aware of is people process information in different ways. So some people are very definitely visual processors, and they like you to talk about things that they can visualize, things they can see. So I talk about taking somebody from their pain to your solution over the bridge of your product. So that's a good visual metaphor. People can appreciate that, particularly, again, for the listeners, I am gesturing here.
So the good thing about, I guess, that analogy is that you know that it's not a sharp, quick bullet.
No.
There's a journey.
Absolutely.
You're clearly painting the picture. There's a journey. There's going to be an up, and then there's going to be a down, and you can really see how this might manifest, if you like, in your business.
Yes.
Now, for some of us, they will need to know that that's a wooden bridge, and it has got rough texture, and there's an apple tree to the left.
Absolutely.
And a babbling brook to the right, and others will just need to go, okay, it's a bridge, I get it. So I guess that's also depending on the language people are using when they're doing these searches, when they're having these conversations. Do I need to give you the bare bones?
Yes.
Do you need a dot point summary?
Yes.
Or can I paint you a picture?
Absolutely. So there are some people who are big picture thinkers and some people who are detailed focused. And if you are a detailed focused person talking to a big picture person, you don't often notice the fact that your big picture person has zoomed out. You've lost me. Just give me the overview.
Just thinking of the other analogy, which I love there, which is I need to know the time, not how the watch works.
Aha. Lovely.
And I get that from my husband. Just the time, thanks, Jack.
Yes.
Talking with a client, it's about having a discussion with them, arriving at this point.
And you're building a relationship with them.
That'll never catch on. Don't be ridiculous. Just give me the widget.
Because the aim is that you're going to have your client as not just being a returner client, but a long-term raving fan who refers even more business your way. So this is why you need to be very clear how you're languaging what you're selling. And if you do it really carefully and really well, you can bypass the conscious brain, which goes, nah, nah, not interested, and go directly to the unconscious brain, which goes, yes, tell me more. I want to know. I want to buy from you. And what's more, passes it on to other people. And this is where your message goes viral. So that's a really important thing. But in terms of a face-to-face conversation, or even down the phone, that's where the subtleties of communication are really powerful. If you can get in a one-to-one or in a one-to-many situation and you can read the non-verbals coming back from your client, you can then switch and change tacks if you need to, because you'll see them glaze over. You'll have been at a networking meeting where somebody's been looking over your shoulder or looking around to see who else they can talk to.
Who else is interesting. Or thinking they're being subtle, glancing at their watches.
Yeah. Now that obviously is a big cue. You've lost rapport. You've not been talking in a way that's exciting them. So what would you do at that point?
Depends on what your aims of the day are, I suppose. Do I need these people as a client?
Yes.
In which case you might look at going... You could do something interruptive and they go, oh, sorry, and then they feel like they're being rude. Though that immediately sets up a tension that wasn't there. I think you need to evaluate it in, were you just having a general chat or was this the sale that you had to get to feed your family?
Yes.
I think the context of that conversation would be how you were doing it.
But you're going to interrupt their pattern
yeah.
because they're obviously away with the fairies and you need to bring them back.
Yeah.
Or not.
Or not, depending on what it is. And I think this is the interesting thing about networking and the finding the purpose of the interaction before you actually start.
Absolutely.
It. Is this a general chat? Are we having coffee? Does it really matter if you're paying attention to me? In that context, when you're away with a therapist, I might go, geez, Wendy, are you all right?
Mm-hmm.
And you'd go, oh, sorry. Oh, yeah, I was just, and I've used that in networking. Mm. So I was just like, look, are you okay? People go, oh, and that's enough of interruption to bring them back. But if you've got purpose for the interaction to start with, is it a, do I need to close a sale? Am I giving them information in that space? Why are we here?
What's the intention? What's the energy you're taking to it? Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think if you don't want to be blindly going, this is a sales call. I need to sell. Here's my widget. Please buy my widget. People go, whoa, just back it up, buddy. But you can have that as an intention and then phrase it in a way that is absolutely about the individual that you're talking to. I always find that sales is not about talking, it's about listening.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got to have that space to go, so you can throw out a question and then just shut up.
Yes.
Let them answer, allow those quiets and those pauses to sit. Mm-hmm. You don't have to fill the gap with all this stuff.
Absolutely.
And it's interesting because obviously at the beginning I said that I always find this need to fill the space, mm-hmm. which I did very much when I was younger because it was like I needed to almost prove that I was competent.
Yeah.
And the only way I could prove I was competent was to tell someone about the stuff I was there to tell them about.
Mm-hmm.
That whole idea of just letting that rest with them or letting that run that round in their head,
mm-hmm.
I think is almost a maturity of relationship thing. Does that sound
like a certainly, there's, it's a maturity with your self relationship.
Mm.
Whether or not you trust yourself, just to let it be. Because if your intention is... This is an important sale. You're in a marketing situation, and if you go in with the idea that this is value-based marketing, you are giving somebody something. Even if they don't buy from you, they've gone away from it. It's going back to your point about how do people feel about you. One of the things I always say is, what are people saying about you when you're not there? So what impression have you left with them? Are you a person of value? Are you somebody that they know, like, and trust? Go back to the KLT factor that we all talk about. Now, if you are somebody who is valuable, then even if they're not your ideal client, they're not your avatar, that's where the networking comes in because they'll go, actually, do you know, so-and-so needs to work on their communication skills. They've got a really big presentation coming up. Need to talk to Wendy about that. Yeah. So that's where the value-based marketing is really important. Mm. Are you a person of value or are you, I'm in this conversation to get something out of you.
Yes, yes. And we are networking with a purpose and I'm going to collect all the cards and put little sticky notes in the corner of them or a tick or a cross of who I'm following up. Yes, yes. There's always purpose to my conversation.
Yes.
Absolutely, yes.
Oh, yeah, there is, but you can do it in a certain way that actually is valuable.
Well, not offensive even.
Just absolutely not offensive.
I mean, there's lots of people in the room, granted, from a networking event, but still, why not have three meaningful conversations rather than trying to tick 30 people off your list and they're a blur and all you've got is a whole stack of numbers for your database? I've never understood.
And can you actually remember who those cards belong to? It's great if you've got a photo on the card. That's a good trigger. But otherwise, you're left thinking, now, who is that? Why?
Hang on. I'll Google them.
Yes.
Isn't that terrible? I just have a quick Google of that person before I ring them so I can work out if I actually remember who the hell they are.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Whereas if you have those meaningful conversations, you find something which either you've got in common or you're interested in about them, or you can have that, start that relationship. Because networking, let's face it, in Perth, is not a huge market. There's not, how many times do you cross over with the same people and you go, oh, that face, I know that face from somewhere. Mm-hmm. Was that?
Where was it?
Mm. Yeah. Okay. So, how do you learn more about what you do?
Okay, well, I run one-day intensive, big intensives. I say they're big. They're not. They're intense and they are one day. And they are actually...
Which by definition does make them a one-day intensive.
Indeed it does. Indeed it does. However, these are not mass marketed. These are small select groups that are exclusive. They're invitation only. They're boutique affairs. So we have a maximum of 8 to 10 people present. I send out questionnaires ahead of time to get feedback as to what people are really after so that from the 25 plus years of experience and content that I can deliver on, I aim it at the people who are there so that they get what they want out of it. So it's a very tailor-made, it's a tailor-made session, but it is intense. I mean, we're working from, I'm doing one tomorrow, we're starting at 8:30 sharp and we're going on till 6. And it's going to be experiential, it's going to be something productive that people go away with.
So they don't just go away with homework, they actually go away with something that they can then do something
Absolutely.
With. Oh, what a great idea.
Absolutely.
But it's so fed up of going to learn things and they don't tell me anything except the facts and I just walk away with a whole bunch of homework.
Yeah, and it then goes on the shelf. And do you look at it again?
I must do something about that. Yes. Yeah, it just goes on the list.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The series I'm running at the moment is called Transform Your Message into Profit.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe that everybody has a message, but few of us are equipped to communicate that effectively. So that's where we're working on. So we're looking at the science behind the message. So how you language it, are you reaching your target market, how you're structuring your message so that we hit the hierarchy of impatience, as well as looking at the language, whether it's visual, auditory, kinesthetic, have you got everything involved so you don't miss anybody out? We're looking then, that's the 7% of the actual words. And are you using words that your client can understand? We're also then looking at the vocal qualities and how important that is. We've already mentioned a bit of this. Speed can be important. If you are talking to somebody or you as a person who's presenting your information has a really strong accent, you've got to be careful because the more you get passionate, involved about your topic, chances are you will get faster and your accent will get stronger. So you've got to be careful about how you're doing that and consciously slow down. Again, reading your audience, because if your audience has to work hard to understand what you're saying, you've lost them. The other thing to bear in mind is if you have learned English as your second language, sometimes the stress on the words is different where you learnt it. I was working with a lady who learned her English in Malaysia, and it took me a while to understand what she meant by her calendar.
Ah, as opposed to her calendar?
Indeed. And I was going, you're what? Yes, we need to get it sorted out on the calendar. Calendar!
Or cadenza is your other option there.
Yes, well, it was so I pointed out that stress on the word would be at this point. And actually, I've worked with a number of people for whom English is a second language and they have learned it out of a dictionary. So teaching them how to read, if they're going to learn their words from a dictionary, like beautiful coprolalia, you're going to look at where the stress hits. And it actually says it in the dictionary. There's a little annotation as to where to put the stress. So I've got a client at the moment who's Iranian. We're working on putting the stress in the appropriate place. He's about to start a supervisory role. And he is all concerned that supervising other people, particularly English first language, he's not going to come across very well. And that's concerning him and it's affecting his confidence. So that's something that we're looking at with him. So that's one of the things to look at. And that's also with your tone. You can also be considerable. You can make an impact if your voice is a little bit out of sorts. You might be very high pitch.
Equally so, you might feel a little bit strange if you come across like this and you're a woman.
Well, it depends on what your business is.
Well, indeed. But people might ask, might wonder if you're a bit of a lovey.
But within that, you've also got things like resonance, where you're resonating, whether you're using head resonance or chest resonance. Okay, I've given you an example of both of those. But also, some people you can tell immediately whether they've got a cold or something because they're sounding what we call hyponasal. And equally so, some people are a bit more hypernasal. And without knowing it, you will make judgments depending on how you're hearing them. Now, I can tell you what exactly is going on from a clinical point of view, but the average person will just sit back and go,
ooh, no.
Yeah.
And that's the things we do We do judge because sometimes, though, especially on a phone, it is the only cue we have to what's happening. Or and listening to podcasts is exactly the same thing. It's the only thing you have is the intonation and the voice, the way it comes across, the whether you can understand it, etc., etc. So if people would like to work with you in this space, or at least have a conversation with you to see if you can understand them, what's the best way for them to get hold of you?
The best way of getting hold of me is either going through the Facebook page ComCoach.
ComCoach with a double M?
Yes. Or you can get me on my phone, which is 0427 474 394.
If you have a particularly strong accent, email or text may be your option.
Absolutely fine. Obviously, the text, you've got the same number. Email address is ComCoach, as in the same ComCoach, at corner, corner.net.au. Think of Wendy's in your corner.
Nice. Brilliant. Thank you so much for your time. I learned a lot through there. That's great. I think definitely things some people can act on, at least consider when they're having their next conversation, and then catch up with you if they need more.
That would be perfect. I'd love to see them and speak to them.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on District 32 Radio. If you'd like to know more, please head across to our website, district32.com.au.